This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina's House Bill 2 and the state budget got most of the attention during this year's short session of the General Assembly, but the bills that did not make all the headlines can have a deep impact as well. Governor Pat McCrory signed one measure that restricts access to footage captured by police body cameras. That same measure also establishes a statewide needle exchange program. Here to tell us about the new law and more is WUNC Capitol reporter Jorge Valencia. Hello, Jorge.
Hello, Frank.
Let's start with the body cam law. What does it do?
This body camera law restricts or makes it more difficult for people uniformly across the state to get access to recordings that are made by police officers. This includes the camera that's on the dashboard and the cameras that the police officers are wearing. The lawmakers who supported this law said that they wanted some sort of uniformity because there's sort of a patchwork of how departments across the state who are recently starting, like departments all across the country, are recently starting to use cameras as part of their uniform.
So what does the law say about the – because, I mean, obviously police officers are public officials doing public business.
Yeah.
So then the question is, well, isn't this part of the public document? That's part of the debate here, right?
So now under North Carolina law, this tape is officially not public record. So the people who can access these recordings are somebody who is in the recording. And they have to petition the police department, so it is still at the discretion of the chief or at the sheriff whether they can see it. And they can see it, they can't record it. Now, somebody else who's a member of the public who says who believes that they have a strong argument for why they should see it under this law is required to go to court, and then a judge has to issue an order in order for the department to release that tape.
So kind of two steps here. One is the police department. They have the initial discretion, and that's for the individual who may be in that that tape. And then if the public, if the press wanted it, you'd have to go to court.
It says so under law. You have to get a court order for it.
So when is it going to affect?
That is going to affect in October.
All right. And so what about on the other side of this now, those who argue that this should be more easily available, what was the case they made?
Well, I'll give you the case of one chief. The Fayetteville police chief is somebody who has for a few years has been known as somebody who's very progressive in terms of transparency. And his position on this law, even though, by the way, it was supported by the Association of Chiefs of Police and by the Sheriff's Association, his position is that he believes that police departments should be proactive, should release as much information as possible, as quickly as possible, so that people can make the judgment as to whether the police did a good job, didn't do a good job, or make no judgment at all. But his position is that everybody, including the police, benefits from this information being available public.
A lot of case studies. Chicago, the first to come to mind, how long the videotape was withheld from the public and the impact that had. So obviously that makes the case for releasing this stuff rather than withholding. And there were also advocacy groups who made the case, right?
Yeah, there was one advocacy group that had planned to petition the governor last week before we had any of the violent incidents that we had in Louisiana and Minnesota and in Texas, and they wanted to ask the governor to veto this bill. This is an organization called the Southeast Asian Coalition, and in particular, they were concerned about a case of a Vietnamese American woman who was mentally ill and was killed by a Greensboro police officer 2 years ago, and so they helped the family lobby the Greensboro City Council for 2 years to be able to access that tape. The leader of this organization, her name is Kat Bao Le, and this is what she had to say.
They, from the beginning, did not want to make a big event out of this. They wanted closure. They wanted to see what happened to their loved one. I think that's super critical for healing, especially for families with a loved one that's been taken away at the hands of police.
That's Kat Bao Le, part of the Southeast Asia Coalition. That argument did not win the day.
No, because that was late last week, and then on Monday the governor signed the
governor signed the bill, goes into law in October.
Yeah, and I think that, before we move on, I mean, I think we should say that part of the argument here is that this law, the governor's argument, the people who wrote the bill, their argument is that this balances people's access to information, but then also that helps the police department, and that it actually, I mean, they could have gone further because they could have made these tapes personnel files, in which case it would have been just impossible for anybody to get them, and they are not personnel files, so there is a mechanism through which people could access it.
All right. This law also includes a needle exchange provision, which is generally seen as a kind of a progressive, legislation. It made its way through the legislature fairly easily. Tell us about how these two bills got connected and how the needle exchange passed.
Well, I think that, sure, you could see it as fairly easily because it passed. But not really. I mean, this is, as you said, this is something that is seen as progressive. This is something that politically a lot of people say that if states allow needle exchange programs, they're in some way condoning or codifying drug use. And this is something that some Republican lawmakers have tried to get through year after year. So what happened in this case, the way that, to go back to what you're saying, easily it went through, is because they used a parliamentary procedure very late in the process. They added this provision into something that was pretty unrelated. And then it passed. There was a lot of debate over it. There are a lot of people who didn't like it. But I think that the argument that prevailed was that, hey, we're not condoning drug use. We're just acknowledging the fact that a lot of people who use drugs contract diseases because they can't access a clean needle. So the state is not creating this needle exchange. They're just allowing independent organizations to do it if they want to do it.
All right. And so this is – it's legislation. And also the police weighed in on this as well, right? This has a public safety aspect as well, not only for drug users but for others as well.
Yes, that's correct.
So now the immigration bills, and this is interesting as well. Let's talk about some bills that didn't make their way through. There were a couple of important immigration bills. One that would punish so-called sanctuary cities, those cities that didn't enforce immigration laws rigidly. The legislature, or at least the leadership, wanted to create punitive sanctions against sanctuary cities. And that seemed in keeping with the ideology of this legislature. It didn't pass. What happened?
Yeah, so it is in line with what the majority in the House and in the Senate have done. They passed legislation very similar to this last year, saying that cities and counties could not have ordinances that were in some way favorable or friendly to undocumented immigrants. They came back this year saying, well, we need an enforcement mechanism to make sure that's it. We need to incentivize cities to follow this law. And so what they said was, what they proposed was to cut off school funding for schools and cut off funding for roads from cities and counties that violated this. Now, the way that they would have done it is that they would have given the attorney general the authority to investigate this and to determine whether or not it was the case. And if the attorney general determined that a city or a county was in violation, then that city and county would lose that funding. And that is I talked to a lot of people who were top members in the House, which is where this failed. And they said that that's where the Republicans in their closed door meetings, where they split on this, because I think a lot of people recognize this could be easily constitutionally challenged to give what some people say the attorney general the authority of being judge, investigator, judge, and executor.
Interesting, though, these questions of constitutionality, which have come up before, and the legislature has lost a couple of cases where people warned them this ain't going to make muster. That hasn't stopped them before. So it is interesting that in this case, there was a division enough to scuttle the bill, and also another immigration bill about local IDs for immigrants, right?
Yeah. So they were two separate bills, but they both got wrapped up neatly into one provision. And this is sort of an extension to what we were talking about with sanctuary cities. There are some members of the House and the Senate who feel very strongly that the Congress has not done anything about immigration. We have to do something about it at the state level. And their position is we just have to make North Carolina just not welcoming and very unpleasant for undocumented immigrants, so they just don't want to come here. And as a part of that, they want to stop people from using ID cards that are issued by community organizations here in Durham, in Greensboro, to stop them from using that. And they wanted to say to the police, you can't look at these ID cards to say what a person's name is. And that wound up, ultimately, it failed along with the Sanctuary Cities Bill.
You know, if you look at that, I mean, again, this is you've got progressive legislation like the needle exchange. You've got legislation that passed easily before, sort of along these same ideological lines, now finding resistance in the House. There's always been a kind of split between the House and the Senate, and But in this case, it seems as though some of the resistance is turning into political power. There's some real pushback against Filburger and his Republican Senate. Is there a sense that things might be that actually changing in terms of the political dynamics?
It is quite possible, and we have a couple of examples of that. One of them was this bill that we were just talking about that related to immigration, that it passed the Senate very swiftly. In the House of Representatives, the Republicans were so divided on it, it didn't even get the light of day. I mean, it didn't get a committee hearing there. Another example that I think is very interesting, especially for those of us who are just total legislative nerds, was this case in which the Senate tried to reorganize the city council in Asheville. Now, it passed in the Senate. That there was a top member in the Senate who wanted to get that passed. It did go through. Once it reached the House, it made it out through committees. Then it made it onto the House floor. Usually, by the way, when something makes it to the House floor, Democrats and Republicans have met behind closed doors. They sort of come to an agreement of how they're going to go on this. Well, there was a lot of acrimonious debate over this one, and people changed their minds, really seemed to change their minds on the floor of the House, saying this is just simply philosophically we can't agree with this. And it completely bucked with what the leadership in the Senate wanted.
We will have to stay tuned. WUNC Capitol reporter Jorge Valencia, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Frank.
Just ahead, author Chuck Palahniuk talks about his latest sequel, the sequel to Fight Club, Fight Club 2. It's a graphic novel. We'll hear all about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.